This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's bring in John Greco on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, former Browns lineman, current Browns analyst. Did you hear that clip we just played of head coach Kevin Stefanski, John, yes or no?
Good morning, guys. Yes, I did.
Okay. Do you believe him?
I believe him to a certain extent, yes. I've been going back and forth in my mind about this because a lot of people have been asking me. Rightfully so, it should be questioned. And, you know, I heard when Kevin says, you know, everybody needs to play better, I think that's where it's at. Because I'm telling people, I'm like, okay, you pull Watson, you put Jameis in. You know, is it going to magically cure all of the other issues on offense? Maybe. I don't know. So I don't think it's that simple of a fix. Now, getting back to if I believe him that, you know, it's his decision, one of two things has happened or is happening. It's maybe he was pounding the table to bring Watson here, and it wasn't just a top-secret meeting with Browns brass where he wasn't involved, and you know, I don't know what kind of opinions or where Andrew Berry was on all of this, but maybe it was more of a collective effort, and now Kevin, you know, maybe he was pounding the table to bring Watson here, and he's got to stand behind that and try to right the ship. So that's kind of the one school of thought. The other one, the idea that Mr. Haslam is saying, you have to say that, you know, you're the head coach and you have to dive on this grenade and go down with the ship and it's all on you. I don't really think that's necessarily true. I just think it's a collective effort and they're of the mindset that, hey, this, we made this decision. We have to live with it. We have to try to get things right.
John Greco with us on the outline. So the hard thing about this is they actually had a little bit of a running game this week. And, you know, it wasn't like Nick Chubb 5.5 yards a carry, but they were getting some big chunk plays and yet still could not find a way to put points on the board. We saw uncharacteristic play calling, the 3rd and 1 to Cedric Tillman I highlighted earlier in the show. Just seems like an act of a very desperate coach and a desperate team.
Yeah, you're right, Anthony. And we've been, you know, hooting and hollering this whole season. It's like, what happened to the run game? And yeah, I get it. Nick Chubb is a generational talent, and things look different when he's in there. And the reason why he's so successful, and you've heard me talk before, when the play is blocked for 1, he gets 4. When it's blocked for 4, he gets 8. He's able to spring those big plays. But the guys that they have on the roster that they can find those holes and those seams and those gaps and fall forward. And I think that, you know, getting Jack Conklin back, getting him up to speed, having the guys that they have on the offensive line, they can still move people and create space. So, yeah, it was a breath of fresh air to see them at least commit to try to doing the run, get the running game going. And I hope they continue to do that because I think that – well, I know, I don't think. They have to be balanced if they're going to score points and win some games. If they're one-dimensional and they can't run, it's over. So hopefully that they continue to commit to that. But you're right, unforced errors – some of the uncharacteristic things, I think that they're just trying to, whether it be break tendencies or, you know, just try to find something that sticks and throw some gimmick plays in there to try to create a spark. Because we've talked about this before, guys. They practice these things. It's not like Kevin Stefanski is just picking these out of the metasphere and they're just running things. Oh, we should try this right now. They're practicing these things during the week, guys, and they're executing them at practice and greenboxing them for the game. They're not just, you know, randomly picking plays. So they're just not executing them in the game. And you have plays that are obviously every week with false starts, offsides, can't get lined up, you know, ticky-tack penalties here and there that are just, you know, putting them behind the eight ball.
John Greco joining us on the show. Would you change out the quarterback right now?
I mean, me personally, I think I kind of answered that earlier. I just don't see that if things would be that much different given everything that's going on. They can't protect Watson. When they do, it's either a drop pass or he's overthrowing or missing a throw, missing a read. But, guys, you know, I'm looking at it just like everybody else. There seems to be a division in the fan base. It's like half the people want to blame Kevin and blame, you know, everything that went to, you know, the decision surrounding bringing Deshaun here in the first place. And then it's like, okay, well, you know, Deshaun's the problem. We need to get him out of there and put Jameis in. It's magically going to fix everything and they're going to score 25 points. And like I said, I had no crystal ball. Maybe they would. But I just see too many things happening, guys, that I don't care who's back there at quarterback. If they can't pick up twists, if they can't get guys on the right hats in protection, Cooper, Dijon, Honey Mustard, comes scot-free on an empty protection and whacks Watson and forces an errant throw, they got to get the right hats on the right people that are coming. They can't let pressure guys and blitzers come scot-free. So it just seems to be a communication mishap or something happens throughout these drives in these games that I'm sitting here scratching my head. I'm like, God, that just seems so elementary that you get your best five hats on their most dangerous five rushers instead of having two guys blocking one or guys coming through the line scot-free. It just seems like a lack of identification, communications that are really causing them, you know, to stall on these drives. And yeah, I listen, I'm not going to, I don't want to sound like an idiot saying Deshaun's been perfect, but it's hard to truly give him an evaluation because half the time he's running for his life. And the other times, guys, he's back there. And you know, if you watch the wide copy, they have six, seven guys in protection to try to help the offensive line, and there's two or three guys out in the route, and they're covered. There's two guys on each receiver. So Deshaun's then running or trying to force a throw. So it's not perfect, guys. I get it that that's the easy solution and you need a spark, but if you put Jameis in right now, I don't know if it's going to magically be better and they're going to score 20 points and win these games. They still have a lot of issues they need to clean up.
We got the great John Greco joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Well, going back to that fourth down where there was a penalty, they were going to go for it. This is late in the game. They were going to go for it. Then Jed Wills gets called on the false start. Then they elect to kick the field goal. A lot of people were upset, and I said, well, gosh, they're just telling you right now. I mean, there's no threat over the top because there's a back line there. So that part of the field is taken away from you. And then there's also the fear that they have and what you just said, the protection and the faith or lack thereof in the quarterback there. Did he make the right call to go for the field goal there, or was it just, hey, we got to throw up our arms, we got to try to throw something to the end zone and try to have some faith in Deshaun Watson?
I think the lack of success in the red zone this year and the lack of converting on third downs in particular, guys, I get it, it was fourth down, but I think you have to take your points. They still had timeouts at that point. And to try to rely on the defense to stop a couple runs and get the ball back, and then you're going for the win. Because if they go for it on fourth down there and you know, they don't convert, I just think probably with analytics and everything that's going on currently with where they're struggling to put points on the board, I think passing on a should be guaranteed three, I think, was the right move. I know a lot of people want to see them take chances. Kevin Stefanski, historically, and that's kind of in his coaching nature, to be aggressive, to go for it. But where they're at right now, I just don't see how passing up on a hopefully guaranteed three and trying to get a stop and playing for the win wasn't the right move. So I don't know what's happened, guys. You know, red zone, I used to get so excited to watch David Njoku get open, you know, close to the goal line, and have guys shake free and see good throws or run the ball and try to soften the secondary and the coverage right now. But it's just – that's where we're at right now. It's just not there. So until they clean up things, mental mistakes, I mean, you have for a second week in a row in a critical part of a game, false start, a pre-snap penalty, and it's killing them. So they have to get it – you have to get it straight. Guys have to focus. Until they do that, they're going to be forced – they're going to be living in these third and long situations, these dire situations, fourth and goal from the 10 and out, and trying to make a heroic play. Until they clean up these little things, guys, we're going to continue to see this product.
John, your first year in the league, when you were with St. Louis, That was a 2-14 team. Was that a young team?
It was mixed. Okay. We had some veterans that were still kind of spilling over from the greatest show on turf. But so just a history lesson there. So the head coach was fired after week four. And if you guys remember, Jim Haslett, he took over. He was the old Saints coach, defensive guy. Mm-hmm. He took over and he said, look, he said, we're doing whatever the F we want. It reminded me of Dan Campbell. He's like, we're going to be faking punts. We're going to be throwing flea flickers. We're going to try to win a game. And we won the next two games. And I was like, oh, God. Everybody was, hey, we're 2-4. We're still in this thing. We can win and get to 3-4 and try to get back to 500. And, of course, we lost the rest of the games that season. But I'm no stranger to this and struggles and changing quarterbacks, as you guys know.
Well, the reason I asked the question is, obviously, this team built a little differently because it's the oldest starting group, at least coming into the season, in the NFL, or it was one of the oldest, not to mention, you know, you talked about winning those two straight games. I mean, this team is 1-5. They're running around talking about how they still have the meat of their schedule, the AFC teams, the AFC North teams. But how is that? How is a locker room when it truly does go off the rails? Were there leaks that started to pop up? What was, you know, the way that it went down over there? Because we're starting to hear some stuff.
Yeah, you know, Anthony, that's a great question. And veteran-led teams, teams that have a lot of guys that are experienced, that are good character people, are always going to hold it together and remind everybody that, hey, look, our goals are still in front of us at this point. And to your point, they haven't played a divisional game yet, and we will this Sunday. But veteran-led teams, teams that have good character people and professionals, will stick together and ride this thing out no matter what happens and continue to show up every day to practice, to work, and try to win games on Sundays. Now, I've been part of toxic situations where you see guys start fighting in the locker rooms and pointing fingers and calling people out in the media, and that's when it gets really, really ugly and it makes it tough to show up to work. So I know that this Browns team has enough character guys, professionals on the team. They're going to say the right things. They're going to do the right things. They're going to show up to practice no matter what the record is, because that's what you have to do. This is your job at the end of the day. Us as fans, of course, we see the product and we expect and we deserve wins and to see a good product out there on Sunday. But those guys, regardless of the situation, I think are still going to keep their things together and show up and work hard every day and try to win games, because that's what, frankly, what we deserve, guys.
How much college football have you watched?
Quite a bit. I mean, I watched the Buckeyes game. I've been pretty busy these last couple weeks with kids and stuff, yeah. But why? What do you got?
You started to watch Shedeur Sanders and Quinn Ewers and Garrett Nussmeier and Pam yeah. Ward. And
Of course I have. Ken, I'm all too familiar with the talk of, okay, what college quarterback are we looking at in April and May? I am all too familiar with that through my career as an NFL player, because we've all seen that Browns quarterback jersey with 100 names on them. I was there for probably half of them, so I am all too familiar with that situation. I don't want to necessarily think about that right now, but I've watched those guys, and as we've seen, guys, rookie quarterbacks and drafting quarterbacks, my God, is it a coin flip, and you never know what you're going to get. You could see a guy in college that looks like an absolute world beater, and he gets to the NFL, and it's just not there. Now, you have some guys this year that are making their rookie debuts, and their teams are winning, and they're performing well. So it gives you kind of that, rekindles that hope in all of our minds that someday, you know, the next quarterback, the young quarterback, could be the answer, and we'll see. But I'm not there yet, guys. I can't start looking at that and thinking about April and May.
Well, see, that's the thing about a Browns season, and it makes us think things that we never wanted to think before. John, thank you very much for the time. We'll talk to you again next week, friend.
Guys, thank you. Always good talking to you.
Absolutely. The great John Greco joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Is it really even a series yet? Because I was told for the longest time, one of the great axioms in all of sports is that a series doesn't really begin till when, Kenny?
You go back to the other team's place, right?
The road team wins.
Yeah, the road team wins.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
Yep.
So if we win tonight, then the series has begun?
Then it officially has commenced.
Now, what if we don't win?
Then it hasn't started yet.
Okay. So it's still, even though we're down 0-2 in the series, the series hasn't started yet.
It's not started yet. It's not even worth mentioning.
Well, let's just be down 1-0 in the series and hopefully make this a win tonight. I got to ask you a question. I'm not going to sit there and talk about it. Listen, you guys want to keep bringing up Jose Ramirez. We spoke about Jose Ramirez, and then they made us look bad, so I ain't going to ever do it again. I'm never talking about Jose Ramirez ever again, damn it. Ain't going to happen. Not in that light. Not like that. No, no. I'm not going to ask him for anything. Ain't going to happen. You want to do it? Fine. I do mean it. I think that there's so much pressure on him that we tend to take it out on Jose Ramirez because we know he's the one that we can count on. Or, excuse me, the one that we want to count on. I can't say we can right now, but he's the one that we have the most faith in. And if he doesn't do it, it's not like there's a faith multiplier around him that makes things easier for Guardians fans. So that puts an immense amount of pressure on him. I got to talk to you about Stephen Vogt. What made him a great manager might be a deficit to him in the postseason. He went young. He went aggressive. Every game was played like a postseason game. That's their words. Austin Hedges brought it up. He's a leader. But now you watch them and you think, well, they should be much better in the postseason. Yeah, but what about Vogt? Because it seems like every one of these moves in the Detroit series and in this series, with the exception of game one of the Detroit series, he didn't really have to do anything. It was a 5-0 first inning. But with every other move, he's a batter off here. He's a batter off there. You know, leaves Alex Cobb out there, shouldn't have left Alex Cobb out there, then leaves Joey Cantillo out there for a little bit longer. And it doesn't mean that don't freak out and start yelling, so you think he's bad. It's not that I think he's bad. He's not bad. He'll be the manager of the year. Now, we've had Kevin Stefanski as the 2-time coach of the year, so I don't know how much that means to anybody anymore, but he'll be the manager of the year. But this is the slings and arrows that we have to deal with because of what? He is a rookie manager, and you're managing against A.J. Hinch, who has won a World Series. Yes, I know he's arrogant, but he has a lot of experience, and you're also managing against Aaron Boone, who, frankly, personally, I can't stand, but has managed in a lot of big moments. And has had managed into the postseason and has had to deal with a great amount of pressure. So there's more seasoning, more time to learn that stuff. And you think about the approach that they've had. Well, this aggressive approach that they've had, now they can't draw walks. Now they're swinging at everything. I mean, Josh Naylor has no plan whatsoever. And he's just the guy we highlight. There's plenty of guys up there that are just flailing away. John Kenzie Noel is flailing away. You've put guys in pinch hitting situations that I don't think have been the best for them, but you have a lot of guys that are taking hell hacks up there. You can't get guys on base to get anything manufactured, and you don't hit home runs to start it off anyway. So you're kind of playing right. You played into Detroit's hand, but you had the horses to beat him. You're playing into New York's hand. It's only been one game. You so far in one game played right into New York's hand. You don't have the horses to beat that team if you're going to do that. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, and look, there are moves, and we've talked about this already. Like, and of course, when they don't work, it's easy, right? Like, we've talked about this. Like, the David Fry bunt looks like one of the spectacular managerial moves in a decade in Cleveland because yes. It worked. It was incredible. It worked. Well, pinch hitting Brennan for Fry, you know, that's not something I think most people were on board with. It didn't work. I'm trying to be as fair as humanly possible. Managers do have a gut feeling at times.
Like, it's not where I would go. Like, if we went into a postseason next year, which is now, I imagine it's expected. When you go into the postseason next year with no matter what happens here, you should have more faith in Stephen Vogt because he's had more time to think about what's happened. He's got more experience. He can go back to that experience, and he'll probably have a lot of the same players. And when you brought up the David Fry play, most of your players are better than what they have in Detroit anyway. So a better team should be able to beat them. You go to this level, you don't have the horses to beat them. Also, you know, Joey Cantillo, you don't have to throw the ball in the dirt. Bo Naylor, damn it, you know, you can make a stop. That thing has been, I don't know what's good. This is where you're still a team that is developmental in so many ways because Bo Naylor is still a developmental guy, and I think a lot of people are just done trying to develop him.
Do you think, though, that a little bit of that, because this is going to be hard for Vogt because he doesn't have the Yankees and the Yankees players, it has drilled into their head immediately when they put on the pinstripes, this isn't about the regular season. This is always about the playoffs and what you do in the playoffs. And so if you shrink in the moment in New York, they just don't use you. You're just not on the team. The Guardians, we don't have that luxury. So you're going to go to Cantillo yesterday, and you're going to try to ride that out, and it was a total disaster, and it lost them the game. Cantillo admitted it after the game. You know, that was the issue. You just let that team off the hook. You gave them that buffer that they ended up using, and they kind of coasted from there. That is the tough thing for Vogt in all these moves, is because he has to look up and down that roster, and he's not seeing a lot of guys that have really been built for those moments or have had that experience. And the guys that have, Naylor and Ramirez, have been coming up short.
216-474-0092. Zach in Cleveland, you're next up on the Fan. Hello.
Boys, it's a sultry Tuesday morning. But I have some.
It's cold outside. It's 43 degrees. It ain't sultry, Zach. Come on now.
Well, you know, I mean, you're kind of mad, so it's a little hot.
Damn it, I'm not mad. It's a game of the series, but well, Zach, it feels like this, you know, to me. Doesn't it feel like the people are saying, guys, it's a 7-game series? Doesn't it feel like they're the ones who are more upset and they want us to talk them into it?
Yep, absolutely. Guys, you see positives last night. Obviously, you said it right there, Tone. I mean, Cantillo gave up the game. And if Vogt doesn't make that move, he goes with one of the other hot hands that he ran through in Detroit just to get out of that inning even. And then he brings in Avila. We're fine. It's a completely different ballgame. Maybe they don't even score that third run because it's a different ballgame. We have a different pitcher in there, whatever the case might be. He just pulled the trigger too soon. He's liking the matchups too much in the playoffs. And I think that I'm kind of happy that this happened in game one, because hopefully it teaches him a little bit of a lesson to stick with his gut and go with who he's gone with to win him games. You know, save Eli Morgan and Cantillo for, you know, burn up some innings when we're down 4 or 5 runs. Go with your four horsemen or whatever they call them when it's, you know, somewhat of a close game. I mean, it was tough to see. And then obviously you guys hit on the pinch hitting Brennan for David Fryett. I definitely didn't agree with that. I was about ready to turn the TV off when I saw that, because he likes the matchup. He likes it. He likes the righty versus lefty. And maybe that's what we liked a lot about Tito, is he did stick with his guys, and he didn't really go with matchup as much as voters doing. But he's a rookie manager. He'll learn. Hopefully he'll adjust. That's why they play 7 guys. We got to win 4. They got to win 4 also. So
the math checks out, Zach. The math checks out, brother. Thank you very much for the call. Then we get to Daryl in Euclid. Go ahead.
How we doing, kid? I think what we saw last night, man, I think the, you know, Brian Cashman from the Yankees, man, he shops at Neiman and Marcus. We shop at Walmart. You know, so when it came time for us to make a move, we don't go get the big names, man. If you look at that lineup, that's money. You know what I mean? You got Soto, Stanton, Judge, things like that. They look overmatched. The Yankees look like the big bad bully, and it seems like whenever it's time for the Dolans or there's a big name out there, and it's a huge name, they kind of shy away from it. They never make that move, but they will go get it, Alex Cobb. Or, you know, and all props to my guy Lane, they will go get a Lane Thomas, but you're just seeing a difference in organizational philosophy. The Yankees will pay to have the best team.
See, this needs to be dispelled, Daryl, and this is the problem with baseball in general, and this is why I hate losing to a team like this, because remember, it's not just the Guardians playing the Yankees, and thank you very much for the call. They're in the final four teams of Major League Baseball right now, where it's also the Dodgers and it's also the Mets, who have the highest payroll in Major League Baseball, and it's also the Yankees, who have historically had the highest payroll in Major League Baseball. So you have 3 teams that are spending nearly $1 billion combined against the Guardians, who are at, what, 106, 109, depending on the time of year when we look at the spot track?
That's the full. It's like 54 for the 26 on the playoff
roster. So that's about as low rent as you get. I'm going to tell you right now, Hal Steinbrenner is a vicious businessman who learned it from maybe the most vicious businessman. He is not spending himself into the poorhouse. They spend $300 million because they can make the money on those teams. That's why. Like, ownership is ownership. That's not a defense. There's definitely been times where they have pinch pennies. 100% agree. But damn it, like, they're in this to make the money. And Hal Steinbrenner has said he's already going to take some of this salary off. So they're like trying to make one more run here before they start to take some of this off, because he knows that there's probably a future in television that's not going to go very well for them. So they're going to chop that down, but they'll still be able to spend more because it's the Yankees. And that's what sucks about the situation. It's not just losing to them. Then you have to question your entire faith in the sport. See, Brian Anderson calls him a big Cleveland baseball fan. Of course, do you believe everything the media has to say to you?
Well, I don't know. Now, how long has Travis been in Kansas City?
11 years?
I imagine.
Long time, man.
2013 is when he was drafted.
He was in these studios during the draft process.
Jeez, I imagine he's got a ton of Kansas City stuff. I imagine he's been to a ton of games.
So he threw out the first pitch here last year. It went, you know, not well. And then he threw one out for the Royals, I think, a month later, which his buddy owns part of.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, he plays in Kansas City. I can understand
that. They share a parking lot.
Yes. So that's understandable. There were people who were upset because he wasn't wearing Guardian stuff last night. Should I be upset about that? Should they be upset about that? That Travis Kelce, like, there were people, he doesn't really like Cleveland. I'm like, I think he likes Cleveland very strongly. I don't think that is an indication.
Now, I don't listen to his podcast, but he represents Cleveland.
They were talking about it last week. Constantly. Gave a Let's Go Guardians on the podcast.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised. I will say I'm a little surprised he didn't wear something. I'm not mad. I'm not like Travis Kelce. I think it's cool that he represents the city when he goes around. He talks about the city. I've said that before, too, about MGK. People get mad anytime we give MGK any credit whatsoever, but I'm like, he has a lot of nice things to say about our city whenever he goes anywhere, and he is now one of the most famous dudes from our city. So I always think that's a positive.
So you had no problem with Travis Kelce not wearing a Guardian set?
I was surprised.
You were surprised.
It would have been nice.
Well, if you were surprised, then maybe you had, then there's a little bit of an ire there too, if you were surprised.
It just would have been.
It wasn't like he just pulled out a hat. I went and looked it up. Those hats are $80 to $100 online just for a hat.
And does he own the company? I mean, what's
probably he might have a stake in it.
That's the problem in a lot of these things. But he is at a Cleveland sporting event. I know he happens to be on the road. So like if he comes, if there's time when he can come to one of these in Cleveland, which I don't know if that he's going to be able to do that now. Are they on a bye week or
last week was their bye?
Yeah. So he's not going to be able to.
He's back. I'm sure he's back in Kansas City or going back right now and getting ready to go.
Yeah. And then who was up there with them? It was Taylor Swift. Was it Jared Carmichael?
I have no idea.
Gerard. Any of
Gerard.
I have no idea.
I only know him from hosting SNL.
Yeah, he had.
I don't know him from his comedy.
He had a special last year on HBO.
Yeah, there were some people who were upset.
How do we feel? I think, if anything, more people might have been upset about who threw out the first pitch.
Who threw it out again?
CeCe.
Oh,
yeah. Thank you for reminding me. Because I did go down a rabbit hole because LeBron had tweeted back at Patrick Mahomes during the baseball game, and it was about Monday Night Football. And then I saw his last tweet that was about the Dodgers. I go, man, what did 2016 not happen here, LeBron? Were you not there?
Yeah.
For Rajay Davis's home run? Like, none of that? I know that LeBron has been very frustrated with the Browns in the past. Very frustrated and vocally frustrated with the Browns in the past. But I'm like, Guardians didn't do nothing to you. What's the matter?
But the throwing out the first pitch thing, does that mean that you are...
We are fighting a war on two fronts. You know exactly what this means.
Does it
mean... We are fighting a war on two fronts.
Well, does it mean that he's
might
rooting
be a losing
for the,
battle?
Is he rooting for the Yankees?
I don't know who
series?
He's rooting for.
We just honored him. We just put him into our Hall of Fame.
But that's the war we're fighting. We are fighting this.
He won a World Series with the Yankees.
We're trying to win this series. We're trying to win the ALCS to get to the World Series. We are also fighting for when he goes to the Hall of Fame. Which hat is he going to wear? That's which one. We're focused on the wrong hat. Everybody's focused on Travis Kelce's hat. You need to be focused on the hat that CeCe's going to wear. Because there is a mixed history there. Now, he likes Cleveland a whole lot. He didn't win a World Series here. He won one with the Yankees.
Well, we drafted him. We developed him, right?
They probably would have I'm sure they would have had him throw out the first pitch anyway. I'm sure there was already a plan.
Are we going to have him throw out the first pitch?
Well, I think that maybe coming up in game three, we might need to bring CeCe back and have him throw out the first pitch.
Is his arm going to be too sore
From throwing out first pitches?
Yeah, does he need to be relieved?
He's in really good shape, though.
Yeah, remember, he lost all that weight. He got off the hooch. I mean, he's doing fantastic
now.
Did
they burn through the arm already?
That's true.
And now where do they go from here?
How many days rest does he have before he throws out that first
pitch? Good question. This is a real fight for his love. This is going to be a tough decision for him. When he goes into the hall, which hat is he going to wear? He won his World Series with the Yankees. Do people outside...
He played more years in New York.
And that is another thing. Do people outside of Cleveland think of him more as a Yankee or than a Cleveland Guardian? Indian.
Probably a Yankee. Yeah,
I don't know what I can do to get him to cross the aisle. I don't know what I can do.
Should he have turned it down?
Throwing out the first pitch?
Yes.
No, you can't turn him down.
What was he wearing? I didn't see him actually throw out the first pitch. Was he wearing Yankee gear?
I didn't see him throw it out either. I only wrote it down, and I'm thanking you very much for reminding me.
Yeah, Mitch, see if you can look
I
into
have the
that.
Video. I sent the video to the thread.
What's he wearing, Mitch? Do you know?
He's got a white New York jacket. A pinstriped inverse colors Yankees jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And what looks to be a Yankees beanie.
Oh, my.
So you're going to have to get him for game three.
Get him out. He's out of our honor. What do we call it? The wall of honor? The honor of walls?
No, once you're in, you're in.
Hall of Fame, Circle of Trust.
You know what we need to do?
What is it called?
You know what we need to do?
I can't even think.
Memorial Park.
It's time to get him.
You're close.
I got an idea.
Monument. Memorial. Heritage.
Hey. Give him a statue before everybody else gets him a statue.
Oh, now he needs a statue.
Give him a statue.
We got to up the ante.
Let's take down.
Is this all a negotiation?
Let's take down Jim Thome's statue. Let's put up a CC Sabathia
statue.
Let's
put CC's on the mound for game three, and then you have to pitch around it.
CC did not. True. CC did not leave us for more money. He was going to leave us for more money because he would have had zero choice in the matter.
And CC
would have had
to
do it.
Milwaukee for three times.
Well, that's technically not true. It was the same. And then he went to New York for like. Five times the pay, maybe even more. CC never actually left us for more money. The other guy who has a statue did.
You know what? Maybe with statues.
Give him a statue. Maybe that'll change.
Going forward, we go digital, kind of like the advertising. They went digital so they can change it all the time. Have statue or make a statue of just monitors that you can change it whenever you want.
So if we
fall out of line or somebody falls out of line with us or loses its luster, you change it.
Bring down Jim, put up CC. Is Jim already in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
And what's he wearing?
Clothes.
Is he wearing a Cleveland hat? I'd imagine. So which way are we going to go with that? Is he going to change that around? Just take down the Jim statue, put up a CC one. Then we'll get two. And just leave it up there. CC was a fine pitcher for us, right? You don't even care anymore. Listen to you guys. You guys already sound defeated about this.
He's wearing a Block C hat.
There you go.
Which he never wore.
No, he actually never did.